So this is the first of what will be at least two, possibly three lectures on project appraisal. So in this lecture and the following lecture, we're going to be asking ourselves, how do we decide if a particular capital investment is a good investment? Now, note my stress on the word capital. A capital investment, a capital project for short, is an investment in real assets, assets that you can actually touch. So I'm not talking in this lecture, or indeed the lecture that follows, about investing in financial assets like shares or bonds. I'm talking about investing in real assets like factories, like the equipment that we will place in a factory in order to go about our line of business. However, the techniques we'll use to decide whether such a capital project is a good project or not are exactly the same as we use to decide if a financial investment is a good investment or not. And those techniques are techniques that we learned in the financial arithmetic lecture. So we've already got the toolkit. The toolkit is known as discounted cash flow. And specifically, the measure we use is net present value, or NPV. Now, the story is richer than first meets the eye, and I've already hinted in earlier lectures about what's really going on. But we'll take our time, we'll learn how to do it, and as we learn how to do it, hopefully we'll begin to appreciate why we do it this way. What does it really mean? That's what I hope to achieve in the next lecture and a half or so. What I want you to imagine, it's not on the slide, you might like to add it yourself, at least think now, I want you to imagine a cash flow diagram. And the cash flow diagram is going to look just like the cash flow diagrams we saw in last week's seminar class. We'll keep things straightforward. We could make it more complicated, but why bother to over-egg the pudding, at least to begin with? So the cash flow diagram I hope you've got in your mind looks as follows. There's a timeline that starts today, and we'll label that time zero, and runs out so many periods, let's say years, into the future. Let's end it big T years into the future. So that's the timeline. So we're looking at a capital investment with an economic or working life of big T years. Then superimposed on that timeline are a set of cash flows. Now, the only cash flow we know for sure today is the cash flow that occurs today. That's the initial investment. So imagine a downward pointing arrow that I label big I. That's the only cash flow I know for sure. The cash flows out into the future are my best forecasts about what size of cash flow the project will generate. But in reality, today, I don't know for sure what they are. If I want to assume that the world is riskless, as I might do in early seminar questions, then I do know the future cash flows for sure. But in the real world, and that's what we're aiming to start to get to grips with, in the real world, the best we can do is forecast them. Now, we don't have the time in this module to learn about how do you go about making forecasts. So we'll just have to take on trust that the cash flows we're given in a particular question are the best forecasts. We'll always assume that. But it does behove us to remember we don't know these numbers for sure. They're our best estimates. So now you have in your mind a cash flow diagram where the initial cash flow is minus I. It's an investment in this capital project. And it's giving rise to a stream of future cash flows, which in the simplest cases are all positive. So represented by arrows that point upwards. I've mentioned to at least some seminar groups last week that in reality, where the project involves a large amount of capital equipment, e.g. an almighty great oil rig, there are decommissioning costs associated with finishing up with the project, safely disposing of the equipment, and they can be sufficiently expensive that that last cash flow might end up negative. And so it often is in the oil and gas industry. So you mustn't go away today thinking, cash flow diagrams always have cash flows that are positive after today. They needn't be. And especially the last one could be negative if there are large decommissioning costs associated with wrapping up, tidying up after the end of the project. So now when you look at the equation that is on your slide, I hope you have a clear mapping in your head between that equation and that cash flow diagram that I've painted out in thin air in front of you. And you should always be doing that. You must make that link in your mind. You don't have to draw the cash flow diagram necessarily. So that is our key result, which we met in the financial arithmetic lecture. That's the quantity we have to calculate in order to decide if the investment is a good investment or not. We must be able to get the net present value. If it's positive, it's a good investment. If it's negative, it's a bad investment. Everybody knows that. Some of you may even have known that before you started this module. But how many of you knew why it's true? What we're actually doing when we calculate net present value is we're comparing investing our shareholders' money in this capital project, that's an amount big I, we're comparing that decision with the next best alternative. And the next best alternative is, instead of investing in this project, is putting the money in the financial markets. And that's why we look to the financial markets to tell us the discount rate. The discount rate big R that we should use in the calculation of the NPV doesn't come out of our heads, it comes from looking at the financial markets. The financial markets always provide the best alternative. That's the benchmark. And as you'll learn as we go further with the story, and as you go into Finance 1 next year, as you'll learn, the benchmark is understood to be a well-diversified portfolio of financial securities. Why this well-diversified? Well, as I hinted a few moments ago when we were talking about Jensen's empirical study of market efficiency, we only want to be exposed to risk that the financial markets reward with additional return. So a well-diversified portfolio has no fat. It doesn't carry any unnecessary risk. The risk it carries is exactly the type of risk that the financial markets reward with additional return. If you remember from the diagram from Jensen's study, we call that systematic risk. Now we'll learn more about that in the cost of capital lecture. So the benchmark for us is a well-diversified portfolio whose risk is all systematic risk and is therefore rewarded pound for pound with additional return. Of course, it's got to be a fair benchmark. Its level of risk is to be the same as the level of risk of our project. But our project's risk may not be all systematic. That's part of the issue. What I want you to understand at this stage is big R, the discount rate, comes from the financial markets, but it isn't just because the financial markets provide the best alternative. It's also, as you now know, because the financial markets are assumed to be efficient. In other words, we believe the financial markets can work out correctly what level of big R should we have for a given level of systematic risk. And that's what the NPV is doing. If the NPV turns out to be positive, what we're actually saying is this capital project outperforms the financial markets benchmark. And that's why we should invest in it. If this NPV turns out to be negative, this capital project is not as good as investing instead in the financial markets. That's why we use NPV. That's why we check to see if it's positive or negative. But don't forget, it's all well and good in IB 114 Financial Management, where the module leader has thought up all the cash flows for you to use in the calculation and also provided you with the discount rate, or at least some means of calculating the discount rate. In the real world, you've got to decide what are these cash flow forecasts, and they are filled with errors. The better you are at forecasting cash flows, the more realistic, the more appropriate will your value of NPV be. Your cash flow forecasts may be seriously in error, in which case your calculated value of NPV may be seriously wrong. You might think you've identified a good investment, but if you go ahead and invest in it, you might lose money for your shareholders. So in the real world, the really tricky bit is deciding with a high level of confidence, what are the best cash flow forecasts? And in the real world, the tricky bit is deciding, what is the value of big R? And deciding on what is the value of big R is the same as deciding on how risky is this project? And there are error bars associated with that. So let's go into an illusion. The technology, the method is easy to get to grips with. In practice, the difficulties are deciding on the correct numbers to substitute into the equation. Let me just say a little bit about this last bullet point, because you might not be familiar with that terminology. It says, if capital's not rationed and the NPV is positive, invest in the project. What that means is, assuming the company has plenty of surplus cash flow, then it should invest in this project. The problem arises, what if the company has identified a number of positive NPV projects, so they all add value, but it hasn't got enough money to invest in all of them? What does it do then? Such a situation is referred to as capital being rationed. When capital's rationed, we have to have some way of ranking the projects. And you need to do question 7 on the seminar sheet for next week to learn how do you rank projects, all of which that are positive NPV, so they're all good projects, how do you decide which are best when you haven't got enough money to invest in them all? That's the scenario of capital rationing, and you have to wait till the last question on next week's seminar to answer that. So, there are two aspects to this problem. In order to calculate the NPV, we've got to decide on the cash flows that appear upstairs on the right-hand side. So that's the C1, C2, all the way out to CT. And we've got to decide on the discount rate, big R. Let's start with the cash flows. These cash flows are incremental cash flows. Now, what does that mean? I hope you like this. It's the best way I can think of explaining it. Don't laugh. When I stand here, I'm looking at the company in the round, so all of the company's activities, in the scenario that it undertakes this new project. So I call this scenario with project. Now I walk over here, and now I'm looking at a different scenario in which the company does not undertake the project, the new project. So that's the without project scenario. It's not as straightforward as you might think. When I stand over here, the company has decided to undertake the project. So now I want you to think about a cash flow diagram. But the cash flow diagram I want you to imagine in your mind represents the cash flows from all of the different projects that the company is undertaking, not just the new project, but also all of its existing projects. So I want you to think about, what's the total amount of investment today? What is the total cash flow to be generated a year from now, 2 years from now, etc., etc.? That's in the scenario where we undertake the new project. I'm going to stand over here. We've decided not to take on the new project. Again, I need you to think about, what is the total investment in any other projects that the company is committing to today? What is the total cash flow all of those other projects are expected to generate 1 year from today, 2 years from today, etc., etc.? Now the tricky bit. It's a subtraction problem. You have to consider the cash flows today in the with project scenario versus the cash flows today in the without project scenario. Then you have to compare the cash flows a year from today in the with project scenario and the without project scenario. Likewise, 2 years from today, blah, 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 until you get to the end of all of these projects. Now I need you to net out, i.e., form the difference. What's the difference in the sum of the cash flows today for the With Project case, and the sum of the cash flows, the investments today, for the Without Project case. What's the difference between the sum of the cash flows a year from now in the With Project case and the sum of the cash flows a year from now in the Without Project case? So you're working out the difference between taking on the project and not taking on the project. But you're looking at the company's cash flows as a whole. Because you're forming the difference, these are called incremental cash flows. You're looking at the effect on the company's overall cash flows of taking on the project. Now, some of you, I guess, are thinking, what an awfully complicated way to go about it. Why don't you just look at the cash flows associated with the new project in isolation? Surely that's the same answer. And the answer is it's not. It would only be the same if the new project in no way interferes with existing projects. But it may be that the machinery, for instance, that has to be used in the new project would otherwise have been used in one of the existing projects. Well, no machine can do two things at the same time. So if you decide to undertake the new project, inevitably you lose out on some of the activity, some of the cash flows that you would be generating otherwise in other projects. In other words, in the time-honored phrase, there are important opportunity costs. They're negative, and you must include them. That's part and parcel of the decision of undertaking the new project. It steals, it robs some of the other projects of some of their cash flow, either because, e.g., machinery has to be repurposed and or people have to be allocated to different duties. That's why you must look at the company's cash flows in aggregate and compare them in the scenario where you undertake the project and the scenario in which you don't. And what I want you to understand from this point onwards, whenever I draw a cash flow diagram now, in the context of appraising, evaluating a new investment, those cash flows are incremental cash flows. They represent the effect of the new project on the overall cash flows associated with the company's activities. If the new project has no knock-on effect, there's no collateral damage to existing projects, then those incremental cash flows are simply the cash flows the project would generate in isolation. But more commonly, that's not the case. More commonly, the new project causes the company to lose out on some cash flows from other existing activities because of an interference effect. And we have to take that into account because that's an example of an important opportunity cost.